It's Alan Chartok here with Governor Cuomo. Usually Joe introduces Governor Cuomo, but today Joe is not sitting in front of the microphone, so I'll take his place. How you doing, Governor?
Very good, Doctor. How are you?
Okay, good. I wanted to ask you a question I've always wondered about, and, you know, before it's all over, I wanted an opportunity to ask you about this. You grew up in the mansion, right?
No. My father became governor. I was already out of law school, right? So I was living in the city, in New York City. I did come up for, I worked with him for the first year or so.
Right.
And I stayed in the mansion, but I went back and forth. But my father was governor for 12 years, and all the holidays were at the mansion, and two of my sisters got married at the mansion. So I spent quite a bit of time here.
Well, the reason I'm asking this, it may seem a little bit obscure, is that the governor had a dog, Ginger the dog, right?
Ginger the dog, yes.
Now, it's my understanding, the governor told me once, Governor Cuomo, senior, told me once that Ginger the dog had called me a fire hydrant with a necktie. And I was...
He meant it nicely, though. He meant it nicely.
I was wondering, I've always wondered whether he actually, because, you know, my dog Murray can speak English, but I always wondered whether Ginger really, you know, said that about me. And then there was a big to-do. We're not supposed to talk about it, I know, but Ginger bit somebody. I remember that. Remember?
Ginger bit someone. She got old and she was losing her eyesight, and... she would snap. I don't know that she really bit anyone. What my father would do, if you remember, is he would quote sources that you could not really debate, right? He was fine. I don't want to get into the A.J.
Parker. You know, I remember
quotes.
That.
But, yes, so he would quote Ginger as making statements, because how could you refute it?
No, he made up people and he quoted them. They sounded like real scholars and other people, but basically, once you got onto the game, he was very clever at that. Let me stop
you for a second. See, because you could not dispute it. You know, if I said today, John Smith said blah 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 blah. Well, what are you going to do with that? You know,
everybody would go and find out who he was, and that's what the reporters began to do.
But how many John Smiths were there?
Sure.
You could never disprove that a John Smith did not say that, right?
Right. Who was the very famous one that he would quote?
A.J. Parkinson.
A.J. Parkinson. Then now there were lots of Parkinsons, but there was no A.J. Parkinson.
Well, you don't know that there was no A.J. Parkinson. You know there may not have been a famous A.J. Parkinson, but I'm sure there was an A.J. Parkinson.
Sounded right, didn't it?
Sounded right. And how could you disprove it? He loved it.
Let me get serious for a moment. Robert Mueller is about to come to the Congress. They want to talk to him. People like Jerry Nadler and others want to hold his feet to the fire. What should they ask him?
Oh, I think I know Mueller says he wants to stay to the four corners of the report, but there was a lot in that report, and I think this can be a very good discussion. I think it's one thing to have a written report. It's another thing to have a person before the committee answering the questions. And I think, look, people want to know what really happened. I know this is all polarized now, and Republicans, Democrats, they see it through a polarized lens. But I think he can actually bring some sobriety to the conversation and some fact. And let's end some of this hyperbolic emotional rhetoric. And he's a well-respected source, and let's just understand the facts before we come to conclusions. You know, we're very good in this political milieu of coming to conclusions. Everybody has an emotion and a very strong opinion, but not everybody has facts. So that's why I think this could be productive.
The Republicans say they're going to prove by their questioning that the whole thing was, anti-Trump. And here's a Republican. Mueller's a Republican, right? And he, you know, he's got lots of creds. Don't you think that's a mistake on their part? They're not going to be able to do that.
Well, look, what do they... You do what you can do in life, right? You're trying to discredit the witness. You're trying to discredit the report. They'll go back to those FBI agents who sent texts suggesting they were not pro-Trump, and they'll try to paint the entire investigation with that animus. I don't think it's going to be successful, but I don't know what else they have, doctor. You know, you do what you can do, and that's all they have.
So let me ask you this, doctor. Doctor, because you're JD, I know that.
Yes.
That's not Jude of the Linguent. It's, you know, doctor of laws. Let me ask you this. You've been friends with the governor of Puerto Rico, haven't you, in the past?
Yeah, I've worked with him after Hurricane Maria. I worked with his father, believe it or not, when I was HUD's
really?
Secretary, and there was a hurricane in Puerto Rico, and I was HUD's Secretary, and I was sent down by President Clinton to actually work with Puerto Rico. I also did a lot of work with Puerto Rico. People don't know that Puerto Rico has the highest percentage of public housing of any place within the United States. And then I worked with his son, the current governor, after Hurricane Maria, because I believe Puerto Rico got a raw deal from the federal government.
Yes.
And we helped them through the federal process and putting together a plan, et cetera.
Well, but I have never seen anything quite like this, this uprising, and from all sectors of the society. Do you have any sense of what this is about?
I'm not on the ground, obviously. I think it's a combination of things. First of all, the politics in Puerto Rico are always very intense.
Yes.
We think we have it intense now. It's always intense. Statehood is a hot button issue. They're much more engaged in their politics. They take it personally. I think there's a lot of bad feeling and a lot of suffering in Puerto Rico now because of the aftermath of the hurricane, and they still haven't recovered. And people really have day-to-day pain. And then in this toxic environment, you have these texts and these back and forth with the current governor. And sometimes I think there are elements in the atmosphere, and there's a spark, and there's combustion. And I think that's what this is.
Now, Trump got a lot of blame for the way he treated the citizens of Puerto Rico. Do you think there's been a sort of an emotional transference from the anger towards Trump, towards this governor?
Transference or... look, we have it much worse in this country, but people are upset. I mean, it's much worse in Puerto Rico. People are upset. And when they are upset, a spark can ignite them. Now, I believe the real target should be Trump of their anger and their day-to-day dismay, because the island is still in very rough shape. They got the short end of the stick from this federal government. I can tell you that because I know what we did when I was at HUD during the Clinton administration. And they're in pain and they're suffering. And yes, it's Trump. But by the way, everybody gets blamed. And why didn't the governor get Trump to do more or do better? And is it fair? Doesn't necessarily have to be fair, but when people are suffering, everyone gets the blame, and those people in power get the blame. But I believe Trump is the main reason for the lack of progress in Puerto Rico. And I think the governor tried mightily. Now, he's made mistakes, but he tried with the federal government. He came up. We did rallies in New York. We met with the congressional delegation in New York. He went all across the country. working with congressional people to try to get the federal government to respond. And Trump threw paper towels to them.
And yet, these messages that have been now exposed, you know, homophobic, this, that, the other thing, that is something you would think any sitting politician, even if they had those insidious, stupid, you know, views, would not put on a piece of paper.
Mistake, mistake, mistake. Grave mistake.
Yeah. Well, okay. So you haven't been in touch with him, I take it, since this has all begun.
No, but I am still interested in helping Puerto Rico. No state helped Puerto Rico more than we did. Thousands of volunteers. We sent down utility workers. We did donation campaigns all across the state. No state did what we did to try to make up for the void left by the federal government. And I'm very proud of what New Yorkers did. And we'll continue to help Puerto Rico.
Talk to me about the power outages. What a thing. Con Ed now turning off power in sections of Brooklyn and other places. Are you outraged?
Outraged is a strong word, but I'll take your word. First of all, it's not acceptable. It is not acceptable, right? We pay utilities to do a job. We had first that power outage in Manhattan, where the whole west side of Manhattan was out of power. I went down with my team immediately. That's dangerous. That's not just an inconvenience. That's dangerous. Traffic lights go out. And remember, in past blackouts, we've had mayhem. We've had looting. That's a public safety risk. Now we have a heat wave. Yeah, it's called the summer. That's what it's called. And in the summer, one can expect a heat wave. And I don't accept Con Edison saying, well, there was a heat wave, and now we're down to about 17,000 people who don't have power. But that's a lot of people, and it's just not acceptable. And I don't even understand the possible rationale. They get paid, the defenders of Con Ed say, well, you know, they spent a lot of money. They spent our money. Taxpayers pay the bill. Ratepayers pay the bill. It's not like they're going into their own pocket. And this is a franchise that is not granted by God. It's granted by the people of the city. And you can change a utility company if they don't perform. And I don't see, look, I'm the governor, and I'm my job is to demand performance. But I don't even see a colorable rationale. We were surprised there was a heat wave. It's the summer. You shouldn't have been surprised.
So what can we do about it? In other words, you're the governor. They have the franchise. Can they be denied the franchise? Can they be brought up on charges? What do you do?
We are doing an investigation now. There's a range of options. They can be penalized. They can be penalized in a way that hurts their own pocket rather than they just transfer it onto the ratepayer's bill. The ultimate sanction is you can lose a franchise. And that is important, Doctor, because if you don't believe too big to fail, reporters said to me, well, they're too big to fail. You can't really replace them. No, you can. And I reject that premise because if you accept that they can't lose the franchise, then you're powerless. Then whatever they do, you're just the victim, right?
Well, can they? I mean,
yes,
you know,
they can.
Talk is cheap. Yeah.
No. Talk is cheap. They can lose their franchise. There is a process. They are regulated by the Public Service Commission. They can lose their franchise. We have changed utilities in the past. We've brought PSE&G onto Long Island. It's a major area. Mm-hmm. It's not easy, but we do a lot of things that aren't easy. And legally, it's totally possible. And again, that's harsh, suggesting they can lose the franchise. No, I'll tell you what's harsh. Blackout on the west side of Manhattan is harsh.
If somebody's sitting there, you know, on some kind of a dialysis machine, you better believe
exactly
it.
That's exactly right. That's what's harsh. Having people without power in the middle of a heat wave, that's what's harsh.
Bob Morgenthau, Robert Morgenthau, just died. He's almost 100 years old. Did you work in his office?
Yes, I did. Yes, what I was, did.
Did you have any time with him?
Yes, I did. Yes, I did, quite a bit. What an extraordinary man. And I'll tell you the truth, in this day where politics is demeaned and political officials, people say, are not of the same caliber that they used to be, this man is a man for the history books. I mean, you know how I revere my father and his character and integrity. Bob Morgenthau dedicated his life to public service, did it as the highest calling. I mean, he's there are TV shows now that model after that office, the Manhattan District Attorney's office. It was arguably the best in the nation. And he was extraordinary. I worked with him personally. Really, just a model. If you have to say to young people, there's still a model of integrity and character in public service, Bob Morgenthau would come to the top of the list.
How would you like to live to 100 years old?
As opposed to the alternative, I'll take it.
Okay. We've talked in the past about Jeffrey Epstein, and do you think Cy Vance, here I can try to get you into trouble, who is the handpicked successor to Morgenthau, do you think Cy Vance should have been more aggressive in pursuing, Jeffrey Epstein in the past?
Thank you for trying to get me into trouble, and I
my
try to resist.
My pleasure. Yeah.
And I try to resist your temptation whenever possible. I was Attorney General. I don't believe or think it's fair to second guess because you don't know the facts. When I was Attorney General, people said, "Oh, you were too tough. You were too easy." You can't say that. You don't know the facts that I knew, and I can't tell you the facts that I knew. So I'm not in a position to second guess Cy Vance. I think Jeffrey Epstein, though, I hope justice is done, because if any of these allegations are true, it's despicable.
I mean, it is. It's maybe a lesson in what incredible wealth can do to a person's mind. Is a question mark at the end.
And hubris, and how wealth can influence the system. You know, if you can hire the right lawyer, if you can hire the right connections, justice for all, even the essential system of fairness, the justice system, has to be policed and has to be monitored, because money can corrupt.
That's for sure. State Education Commissioner Mary Ellen Leah is leaving the position. When somebody leaves, everybody says, well, did he force her out? It's a separate bureaucracy, of course. Or did she leave on her own? I guess that's the question.
Yeah, you answered the question. It's a separate bureaucracy, State Education Department. I have nothing to do with.
Well, no, you have something to do with it. You have something to do with it. I mean, you know, they have to depend on you for the money. Don't give me that, right? I mean, you're the guy who has, in the past, made it clear that there were some things that were acceptable and not acceptable in the educational sphere. No.
They have to depend on me for the money. That is not a true statement, Doctor.
Well, it is a true statement, Doctor.
The legislature passes the budget. Yeah. There is the board.
Yeah, and you have nothing to do with that? You have nothing to do with what's in that budget?
you said, I didn't say I have nothing to do with it, but you said it was me.
Yeah, it's you, because you're the big kahuna in all of that. What?
Big kahuna? Kahuna. What exactly is a kahuna?
I don't know. I have to look it up.
You bet. But see, you should know what the word means before you say it. Just a suggestion. The Board of Regents, she responds to the Board of Regents. As far as I know, our interactions were all nice. They were very limited. But I have no idea of what her plan was or why she moved on.
Were you disappointed?
I think she was doing a good job. I heard nothing negative.
Okay. What would you like to see from her successor? Is there anything you've got on your plate educationally that you think needs to be done?
Yes. Now that you ask.
I did ask.
We are in the middle of a presidential campaign. And I have been trying to make the point over the past few weeks that in this presidential campaign, to prosecute an argument here, there's two sides to it. One, the other person is not acceptable, and two, we provide a better alternative. Donald Trump is not acceptable. I think the best person to make that argument is Donald Trump. And I think he's done it extraordinarily well, and I think he does it every day. And I think the Democrats should just let Trump continue to talk, the divisiveness, the anger, the irrationality. The second part of the argument is, this is who we are as Democrats. This is what we believe, and this is our agenda, and this is what we will do, and this is how it will improve your life. That part of the argument, I think, needs to be better developed. And that's normally done through the primary process. Right now, we're focusing more on personalities of the candidates. This person's young, this person's old, this person's from this part of the country. That doesn't win. What wins is, God bless my father, the rationale. What's your rationale? We're all progressives. Okay, what does that mean, by the way, progressive? Everybody's a progressive nowadays. What does it mean? And what is a progressive philosophy? And what is the progressive agenda? And what would you do? We did the farm workers bill last week. Robert Kennedy started the farm workers bill, 1967, farm workers' rights. A progressive, my father, 1992, advanced farm workers' rights. A progressive. I was with Al Gore on climate change, a progressive.
I was going to ask you about that, because since we've drifted away from the education issue, you were with Al Gore, and what about this? Let's put it this way. You signed the new climate bill, called it the most consequential law of your administration. How did you come around to that bill after downplaying it a bit, including on the show back in June? How come?
Gotcha. I'll answer that. Let me just finish the point quickly because I know it's a long point.
It was.
On education, yeah. I would like to see the Democratic Party say, we need to care about the working families, middle-class families, and the poor. Minorities, civil rights, civil liberties, and we have a problem with poor schools, and we have to fund poor schools, not fund all schools, including the rich schools, as a way to fund poor schools. I know that's politically easier. We have to fund just poor schools because it's educational equity, and that's what I've been pushing in my budget. That's what we've been unable to do, and that's what I'd like to see the Democratic Party as a quote-unquote progressive have the courage to stand up and say, no, I'm not going to give more money to the rich school just so I can give money to the poor school, and we have to fund all the schools politically because we don't have the courage just to fund the poor school.
But don't you always say that? And then in the end, you end up giving money to the rich schools in order to give money to the poor schools.
Well, because I have to get it passed, which refutes your point that I do the budget. I do the budget. I'm the big kahuna, even though we don't know what that means. I have to get it passed. And the legislature, everybody wants to go home with more money for their school district, even if it's a rich school district. So I'd like to see the Democratic Party say, here's what I mean by progressive. I mean more money for poor schools. I mean, I'm going to stand up and fight for minorities and the disenfranchised. I'm going to stand up and fight for the people who were in Rikers Island. I'm going to stand up for the tenants who were in NYCHA and public housing units all across this state, using New York as the microcosm for that analysis. That's a progressive. That's what Robert Kennedy would be doing and my father would be doing. And that's the best of the progressive tradition, and that's what we should speak to as in my definition of a progressive. And I'm offering my definition of a progressive as in our microcosm of New York, which is a fairly large microcosm, but those are the issues that a progressive would be attending to. On climate change, when we talked about the legislature put forth a bill, and the bill on climate change, I believe, was flawed. The legislature, some members of the legislature, especially this session, they were making political statements rather than policy statements, right? You have a lot of electeds who just took a political statement from an advocacy group, slapped the bill number on it, and submitted it.
And any specific names there you want to?
Let me think about it. No.
AJ Parkinson,
I'm in a charitable
like that.
Mood.
Yeah.
No,
yeah.
I'm in a charitable mood. I'm relaxed today. I went out. I spent some time with my daughter this weekend, so I'm all sort of relaxed and my edge is down. But the climate change bill put forth was more of a political statement, and it was it had serious issues. We changed the bill. Now, we already had the most aggressive goals in the country. And we have goals now that go out to 2050. Yeah, that's great. I hope I'm here in 2050. I hope you're here in 2050. I hope we're having this discussion in 2050.
You got a better chance than I do. Go ahead.
But I'm a little skeptical of these goals that go out for 2050. So I was more focused on, let's have the goals, and we have the best goals in the country, and that's good. But let's do something today that actually puts us on the path to accomplish those goals. And let's not overly politicize now the money that goes to the environment, that we make it basically a political program. So we made the changes in the bill. We have the goals. It's a good bill. But more importantly, we announced the largest offshore wind farm in the United States of America, 1,700 megawatts, 1 million households with our wind turbine program. No one is doing what we are doing because
who's
the real
paying for that? Who's paying for that? Who's paying
you
for
are.
That?
You are.
How so?
The people of the state of New York. Because
well,
we'll
I live in Massachusetts, but I do pay in New York. I do pay taxes in New York. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you're sitting in a New York building. Where are you now?
No, I don't want to tell you.
Okay.
I'll tell you. I would tell you, but I can't.
Yeah, okay. But your station has buildings in New York. So it's,
oh, indeed they do. Yes,
by the ratepayers in New York.
And they pay, and they also pay me my salary. So therefore, yeah, they tax that salary. And you get it.
But look, the whole thing on climate change, okay, we have great goals. Everybody wants green power, a green revolution. I'm green. You're green. We're all green. Okay, how do we get there? How do we get from here to there?
You've got 1 minute.
No fossil fuels. No fossil fuels. Okay, that means no cars, no planes, no trains, no heating of a home. Let's everybody use a candle. To do it, you need a renewable source of energy, and no state's doing that better than we are.
Always wonderful to talk to Andrew Cuomo. Governor, thank you so much for being with us. I always enjoy it, believe it or not, even when it doesn't sound like I'm not enjoying it.
I am enjoying
Let's look
it.
Up kahuna. Please send me the definition of kahuna.
Will do. Okay, thanks a lot. Now back over to Joe Donahue, and thanks, Governor.